And here we are, folks. I'm Johnny Tsunami, and this is Planet Pako Lolo. For those of you who don't know, Pako Lolo is Hawaiian slang for crazy tobacco, also known as marijuana. But this show is about removing the crazy out of cannabis by taking away the stigmas, the stereotypes, and taboos connected to this illustrious plant. Today, we talk about cannabis and medicine with a very special guest, Dr. Jennifer Anderson, MD, family physician, and cannabinoid specialist. Jennifer, welcome to the show. Oh, Jen, you're on mute.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So a little background on Jennifer here. Over the past 4 years, Dr. Anderson is committed to helping other kids who have failed all options exploring cannabinoids and have seen amazing results. She now works to advocate, educate, and advise on cannabinoids to patients, colleagues, and the industry.
Yes, I do that. Yes, I'm from Canada, so I'm a family physician here. And for the last 5 years, due to some personal sort of experience with cannabis, I have become an advocate for kids here. And we've also just had a lot of change in our laws in Canada, which has helped us to move cannabis ahead in the medical fields.
So let's talk a little bit about Canada versus the U.S. since you're ahead of us on that realm. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in Canada with cannabis.
Yeah, so in Canada, we've been able to prescribe marijuana for medical purposes for quite a few years. That law has sort of evolved over the time, well, the last 10 years. And in 2018, we had some new laws that made recreational cannabis legal. And so from that time, things have kind of gotten even a lot better for those who use marijuana for medical purposes. Prior to that, you know, everyone was a little bit worried about what happens when you let a whole country have marijuana legally. You know, none of us really knew what was going to happen. There was a lot of skepticism, even about whether marijuana, but actually what's happened is quite the opposite. I think that people, because they were able to just go and access whatever they needed at dispensaries, they started approaching their physicians and wanting to use things medically, which has put a lot of pressure on physicians to know something about cannabis and to actually get more educated and try to figure out what to do with these patients. And as we've learned more about cannabis and, you know, the drug interactions, the new studies coming out regarding epilepsy and a lot of anecdotal uses for cancer, autism, and I mean, there's tons of people that are using for chronic pain. Physicians have had to answer, you know, why they will or will not support their patients, you know, and that's forced them to really try to integrate their medicine with cannabis. So it's interesting.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the regular battles that you've had to deal with from when you got into this, moving forward to present day, having to constantly validate what you do, right?
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, I think my practice is a little bit different. I'm a consult only practitioner, which means that I'm a family doctor who has a special interest in cannabis and helping other doctors and patients integrate it into their care safely. And so because I really pushed forward the idea of being a consultant, I found that the physicians around me have given me sort of the opportunity to help them, but also they would rather refer their patients to me than have their patients go down the street to a dispensary. And, you know, prior to 5-6 years ago, most physicians in this space were basically seeing patients on the corner, you know, some were charging a fee or, you know, they're kind of seeing them outside their primary physician's, you know, world. So where I am, you know, I offer it as a consult service so we can help integrate cannabis into that, the primary care physician's plan. And I can be as involved as they want. I can take care of all the authorizations. I can help that physician try to navigate cannabis with their patient. And because it's in Canada, it's all covered under our health system, and we just bill the government. So, you know, the patient gets to use the cannabis, they get to use it safely, and they get to still be joined with their family physician who knows what's going on.
So when they get billed, is that something that happened immediately once the country went federally approval, or was there a little bit of like a process to when eventually the healthcare companies came on board and said, yeah, you could write this off, or you can include us in that? Was it an overnight thing, or has it been a gradual process?
Well, in Canada, our government actually pays for our healthcare. So it's not insurance companies like it is mostly in the States. So when a patient comes to me, I live in Manitoba, so that's a province. I bill Manitoba. Manitoba Health cuts me a check for the work that I've billed them for. And the patients don't pay anything. There are services that are outside of regular care where patients can go and choose to pay for services, but they're very few. What happens with cannabis is that because I'm just a family doctor that, you know, happens to specialize or have more of an interest in it, I just bill the government for a consult. And, you know, that patient doesn't pay for anything. They go to their doctor bills the government for that visit. You know, that they send a consult to me. I see the patient, I bill the government for the consult. And I, you know, write up my letter back to the primary care physician and sort of tell them our plan and everything. And then I follow the patient and just bill visits to the government. So does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It sounds great too, because it's like, you know, that's not what happened. Not in the US. That's not what we're doing. So that could be a challenge.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we have higher taxes and that helps to pay for that. The other thing that's happened is that, so medical cannabis in Canada is not covered by our pharmacare, but there's a lot of insurance companies that are recognizing that it's actually worth it to cover it because it's getting people off benzos, off opioids. And I mean, if we just look at my case alone, which I know we'll talk about, I have a child with epilepsy that was in hospital 90% of the time. We were in ICU, we were taking ambulances. Were in and out for most of his life. After using cannabis, we haven't been in a hospital for 3 years. So the cost savings to the system is huge. So, you know, when we're talking about insurance covering cannabis, it not only helps, you know, put people back to work if it's for chronic pain, or, you know, help my son, but also it helps those parents because now the kids aren't in hospital all the time and the parents can actually work. So, you know, there's so many things that go into whether or not, you know, cannabis should be funded. But I think that the pros are outweighing the cons and a lot more insurance companies are hopping on board.
That's a very hot topic too, is using it for pain management, because typically in the past, as you said, it was benzos, it was opioids, and those things have been really plaguing, and I'm not sure of the statistics in Canada, but in the US, it's a pandemic in and of itself, because the doctor has always been conditionally used to saying, take this prescription for this kind of pain. So it's really nice to see cannabis to kind of come in and shift and perhaps grab that market share.
It definitely is. I also work in emergency and I work in hospital in a busy rural center here. And there are so many chronic pain patients that come in daily. A lot of them are with chronic abdominal pain related to diabetes and gastroparesis. Lots of them are chronic pain related to injuries. And a lot of them are off work and, you know, they rely on their opioids and they come in and out and in and out. And a lot of times, you know, because my hospital has been very supportive of me and my work, I will say, do you want me to come follow you up? And you can try exploring cannabis. And most of the patients look at me and they start crying and they say, you know what, I really wanted to, but I didn't have a physician that would help me. And so I start working with these patients and I literally see their ER visits drop substantially. And a lot of them are coming to me on opioids, fentanyl patches. You know, some of them are cancer patients, but lots of them are just, you know, patients with chronic back pain related to some injury, you know, and they're off work. Well, I take them, or fibromyalgia, that's another big one. You know, I take them, I start working with them. I usually put them on a regular daily dose of CBD. And then I add in some microdosing of THC because that's legal here. And they come off their opioids. I tell them, okay, do not come off your opioids. I don't want you going into withdrawal. And then, you know, no joke, 3 months later, they come in, they give me all their opioids and say, I'm off of them. I never want these again. And sometimes I'll say, well, just go take those to your pain doctor, you know, but, it's incredible. It really is. It gives people their life back and they go back to work. It is so rewarding.
That's amazing to even hear that people could do that, because we all know that the opioids can be something that's really hard to get rid of. And it starts, like you said, with something very, very basic. It's, I sprained my ankle. I hurt myself at work, and, you know, it starts on a very little tiny insignificant thing. And then it evolves into something bigger. And you had mentioned pharmacare. And I think that's also something when you think about how pharmaceutical companies have a lot of power, especially in the US, we're one of only two countries in the world that allow televised publications of pharmaceutical drugs. The other one being the Netherlands, that, pharmacare has a very strong hold in the US. And I think that that's something that we have to battle, being cannabinoid or cannabis people. And, you know, what are your mm-hmm. thoughts on that?
We don't have as much here. Our pharmaceutical companies aren't allowed to interact with doctors, you know, just because of conflict of interest. But definitely, you know, one thing that is emerging is the pharmaceutical companies getting into the cannabinoid space and making pharmaceuticals, which is a whole different topic. And it's great, but it's got a lot of negative aspects as well. If we just look at Epidiolex, which was made by GW Pharmaceuticals for kids, you know, it is a plant-based cannabinoid product that's been studied through studies funded by pharmaceutical companies for kids with LGS and Dravet's. And it's been great in that it's put cannabinoids into the light and actually, you know, made a lot more physicians look at it because there's a published study for it. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that once we start having these pharmaceuticals, all of a sudden we're only allowed to prescribe them. Whereas we know cannabis is so much more complex. You know, cannabis has so many other things in the plant. There's more cannabinoids, there is terpenes and flavonoids, everything working together to have whatever effects we want for that patient. So being just bound to one specific product is a bit difficult sometimes, because if a child doesn't respond to that, then in lots of cases, they're not allowed to try anything else. So there's a lot of unknowns in the future as to what's going to happen with pharmaceuticals.
Well, I'll tell you what, we already went through 15 minutes. That's how quick that was. So we already are touching upon some really important stuff. And when we come back after this short break, we're going to talk a little bit more about the business end of how you work in your firm and your consulting end of being a doctor and helping not only your own children, but all these other children as well. So Dr. Jennifer Anderson on Planet Paco Lolo, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll get a little bit deeper. Okay, everybody. Talk Radio NYC, coming right back.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m. So tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
This is Planet Paco Lolo, and I'm here with Dr. Jennifer Anderson, all the way out. Jennifer Aniston, you're interviewing? Oh, my God. No, Jennifer Anderson, all the way out in Canada, family physician, telling us some really amazing things about how she uses cannabis in her consultative practice as a family doctor. I just want to read a little something that you had wrote back in 2019. It is unreasonable to think that a busy family physician, psychiatrist, or neurologist could keep up to date in this exciting but evolving field. As a family physician who specializes in cannabinoid medicine, it is my hope to provide education and advising based on the latest research and experience. So, yes. Dr.
I think that describes my practice very well.
That's why we did it. We're right here. And now why don't we get a little bit into the practice and tell me a little bit of the business behind how you work as your day-to-day operations.
Yeah. So I work out of a center called Egoze Health here in Winnipeg where I live. And there's two other physicians there. One of them, Dr. Shelley Turner, she does a lot of opioid antagonist therapy as well as cannabinoid therapy. And there's two other family docs that do a blend of cannabis as well as just family medicine. I came into the practice last year and brought my sort of consult practice there, being the main one that looks after kids. And my practice, you know, I take patients only by referral, and I help to work with pediatric neurologists, pediatric hematologists, as well as oncologists and psychiatrists. I have quite a lot of a referral base, and I help them navigate cannabinoids for patients who have pretty much failed other therapies. So, you know, epileptic patients that have failed at least 2 to 3 anti-epileptics, autistic kids that are just not doing well on any therapies, kids with different types of cancers, you know, helping them with both symptomatic and tumor reducing cannabinoid therapy, and trying to keep up to date with, you know, the various strategies that are being used and studied. And so I see my patients in a consult and decide whether or not, you know, they're interested in exploring cannabis. If they are, we set the goals of care and what their expectations are and try to agree on a 3 to 6 month plan of what we're going to do and what we hope to accomplish. And it's my hope within the 3 to 6 months to decide whether or not that patient, you know, is going to be successful in using the cannabis for whatever we're trying to use it for. And if they're not, then we decide, you know, maybe cannabis just isn't the right thing for them. And so with every patient, I kind of go through that same process so that it's not a pressuring thing. You know, me and the patient explore lots of different avenues. We try different types of products. We try microdosing in different things just to see if we can get the result that we want.
So you said referral based. Is there a reason why you prefer to use referrals?
I think when I look at how traditional medicine is, you know, we as a family doc look after our patients' needs as a whole. I think that it's important to start to try to incorporate cannabis into that picture. I think that having patients feel like they can't tell their family doctor what they want or what their primary care physician what they want if they were looking for cannabinoids. I think that results in a breakdown in communication and a breakdown in the relationship between the physician and the patient. You know, and then what happens is that the patient just goes down the street and gets something from the dispensary and uses it on the side. And meanwhile, that patient could be on warfarin, could be on lots of different medications and have bad outcomes because nobody's, you know, helping them with trying to minimize the harm that could happen with cannabinoids. So, you know, my choice to just be a consultant was made to try to integrate cannabis into regular care. And try to help other physicians see what it was doing for their patients and see that there was, you know, a method to using it and that there were reasons why we need to care about it being incorporated into that patient's care. So it's been well received, and actually the physicians around me would rather send them to me because they know they're going to get a letter back and they know that I'm going to follow them weekly, monthly, and send them regular updates. And we develop a therapeutic relationship, between everybody involved with that patient.
Yeah. And that's something that's kind of keeps repeating where I feel like you've created a unique position within the healthcare space where you've acted as like a conduit between the patient and the system.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a really important thing. That's a really important thing.
Yeah. You know, and I know we're going to get into sort of talking about my story, but I think that when we do, I can kind of, you know, that will also help to show why I feel that it's so important. Just having been through the experience myself and not being able to, you know, use it within the constraints of my regular healthcare, that's hard. And it's definitely needs to change.
So that being said, on a day-to-day, what do you find to be some of the issues or problems that you have to handle and deal with specifically with what you're working with?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions. One being, you know, patients need to come to pay to see me, which is not true. So that's a big criticism I get that I have to address all the time, just reinforcing the model that I have. There's a lot of misconceptions about the research involving cannabis and a lot of physicians that just want to shut down anything that we say about cannabis, but not realizing that research is actually evolving rather quickly right now. And, you know, we weren't even able to research cannabis before because it was illegal. So, you know, it's got all this political background that contributes to where we are today. And I think that a lot of the medical field don't realize that. And once they do, though, they're very much open to discussing it. And so those would be the main things that I come across. The other one being patients who really want to explore cannabis and their doctors are just saying, no, no, no. You know, I will take some patients, depends on what the story is, but you know, for instance, kids with epilepsy that have failed everything in the past, they would come and message me through my website and say, can you please help us because our doctor won't support us and yada, yada, yada. And so on a case by case basis, I will, you know, look at that case and try to maneuver and figure out what to do with it. But thankfully, that's a whole lot less now because where I live, pediatric neurology, pediatric hematology, and oncology have actually sent me letters saying, you know what, we're not going to authorize cannabis. We're comfortable with how you manage the kids. So we're just going to send the referrals to you and you can help co-manage this piece of their care. And so now these kids don't have to come to me. They actually can go to their doctor. They'll refer them. And so that's a huge obstacle that we've overcome. And a lot of it has been because I've been writing letters back and tell, even if they haven't referred the kids, I will write them a letter and say, okay, your patient approached me. They want you as part of their care. You know, they want you updated. And this is what we've decided to do. And so they've watched that there's a method to what we're doing. There's a dose per kilo that we're using. there's endpoints that we're using, you know, and we're using very objective data, whether it be seizures per day or whatever it is, to try to get solid outcomes. So it's built a lot of trust in that, in this model.
Mm. Physician kickback. Maybe give me a little bit of that. I mean, if you have any maybe stories that kind of stick out where you've had kickback, if you could touch upon that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely less now, but I have had physicians call and ream out my staff unnecessarily, just because a patient has asked for a referral or something, right? And there are a lot of older physicians that just aren't open to learning about anything new. And they're not open to incorporating cannabis into their practice because they're used to the war on drugs. They're used to, you know, cannabis being a bad thing, you know, but then it's changing. It's much better now.
Yeah. And that's another thing that kind of just pops in my head too, is that it's that war on drugs or that kind of conditioning that they've been into. And maybe doctors in general don't want to share their patients. You know, they don't want to go to someone else and be like, well, I'm the person that has all the answers to your problems. And mm-hmm. then when they find out that that may not be the case, then that can be threatening.
Yeah, I do see that. I see a lot of physicians stubborn in what they want to do with their patients and not really willing to look outside the box. The way I've overcome that in my own practice is that I maintain almost full-time eMERGE work as well as hospital work. And so in doing that, everything I do with cannabis is basically because I'm passionate about it. I don't use it to pay my bills. I completely have kept it all separate so that I am really just here for the patients, you know, and I'm here to help educate. And a lot of this goes back to my own story and feeling like I just want to make a difference. I want other patients to have an easier time, and I want to help facilitate that. And I want to be part of this, what's happening with cannabis. I want to put forward a new way of dealing with it and a new way of interacting with patients and incorporating it with this type of model.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely beautiful, because like what we try to do on the show is to really bring in people that are not just what you would consider to be the typical cannabis, whatever. Usually when we think cannabis, either they're the cultivator or, you know, something basically directly connected to cultivating or raising the plant itself. And there's all these other ancillary businesses and opportunities now where people like yourself have come in and said, no, there's more to this plant than just what it's been considered in the past. It's about breaking those taboos, which is definitely what you're doing. So we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to go more into the personal side. And Dr. Anderson is going to be able to share with us how she's been able to use this amazing therapy for not only just children that she works with, but her own. So this is a beautiful story. I'm very excited that she's here. So we're going to take a little break. When we come back, Planet Paco Lolo will go another round with Dr. Jennifer Anderson. Talk Radio NYC.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. It's Planet Paco Lolo, and I'm here with Dr. Jennifer Anderson, flying all the way in from Manitoba, Canada, taking us to a little bit of the different side of how we should be looking at cannabis as medicine. So, Dr. Jennifer, thank you very much for coming in and sharing with us today. And I really want to get into this segment because it's about how you really came into doing what you want to do and why you serve the people that you serve, because this is probably one of my favorite parts of who you are as an individual and what really attracted me to want you to come onto the show.
Yeah, I definitely never ever thought that I would be a physician that gave marijuana to kids. If you told me that 10 years ago, I would have said you were crazy. But, you know, my story just makes me even more passionate about it. So I have a 9-year-old now who is a twin. And in 2016, he started, his seizures got out of control. He does have cerebral palsy and tractable epilepsy. He was a donor twin in twin transfusion syndrome. And so he was born with his whole brain developed abnormally due to a lack of blood flow. So, you know, we struggled with him the first couple of years, thinking that he was having seizures, and he would wake up at all times of the night with shrieking and different types of things. And I kept going to the neurologist and saying, I think he's seizing. You know, it took a really long time for them to diagnose it. And he was finally diagnosed with electrical status epilepsy in sleep, which basically meant that when he went to bed, he was seizing all night till he woke up. And then he progressed to have vomiting seizures. He had lots of different drop seizures, turning blue, just lots of atypical seizures. And at one point he just 2016 in the spring just started just in a downward spiral, ended up in ICU. His vomiting seizures caused aspirations. So then he ended up with chronic lung disease, and he would go to ICU and need BiPAP just for a cold. And so we spent almost all summer of 2016 in hospital. And at times he was in ICU, unresponsive for days on no medication. So assumably he was seizing in retrospect. But in any case, fall of 2016, been divorced for a year, so I was just on my own with my three kids and working as a family doc, running a practice, doing some obstetrics, doing ER, hospital, and my son was in hospital all the time, so I had to quit my practice, and I just moved to just working ER at that time, and basically my son was sent home, and they just said, do you want him resuscitated, you know, because we were basically getting home, calling an ambulance, and going back. And so at that time, I realized that this was serious. We weren't really going to have that much more time, given the fact that everybody with epilepsy has a chance of having sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, which means they can just suddenly die from a seizure. So if you're seizing all the time, then your chance of dying is higher. So, you know, at that time, I voiced my the fact that I'd wanted to try cannabis, but my neurologist at the time, they basically said, you know what, it might work, but we can't help you. You got to go find a family doctor who's an expert in epilepsy and cannabis. And, you know, we can't help you do that either. So basically go find the unicorn and tell us when you do, because, oh yeah, you can't give it to him. It's illegal unless you have a prescription. So this was in 2016. This was pre-legalization of recreational, very hard. And at that time, one of my friends had been using a product called Charlotte's Web for her son, which was hemp. And at that time, no one was really, you know, aware of hemp being under our Cannabis Act. And so, you know, she brought this bottle over and she's like, you want to try it? And I said, sure. Like, I don't know. I paid $200 for this little bottle. And I gave him one drop on a Friday night and he hadn't slept for years. In any case, I gave him one drop and he slept the whole entire night. And I thought that was a bit weird. I never actually thought that this was going to work. Like, just, you know, I was actually a doctor that did not accept patients that wanted cannabis. I just started a practice. I'm like, I'm not going there. Like, it might work for some people, but I'm not going to incorporate it into mine, you know? And so I was pretty skeptical. But then the next day he had seizures. And then, so that was a Friday night. Saturday night, I gave him another drop and he slept the whole night. And then I thought that was a little bit strange, but Sunday he still had some seizures. And then I gave him another drop on the Sunday night and he slept again. And actually I brought him to daycare on Monday morning and they looked at him and they said, he just looked different. He looked alive. And I looked at him and I realized like he just slept for three nights straight. So even that was huge for him. And he actually looked alive. He had spark in his eyes. We hadn't changed anything else. He was still on valproic acid, clobazam and Keppra, you know, but he was alive and he was interacting. And so on the Tuesday I called neurology. I'm like, oh my gosh, like he's sleeping all night. He's not seizing. He looks like a different kid. And the reception was not great. It was basically, who's prescribing it for you? You have to stop it until you get someone to. And I said, well, this is hemp. Like, it's not even, it doesn't have any THC really in it. And so anyway, they were very strict. You know, you have 48 hours pretty much because you're a colleague, go find someone to help you. So I went to the top of Pete's palliative. I went to the top of Pete's oncology. And I just said, please help me. You know, can you guys please help? Like, you guys are looking after these kids that have failed everything, right? So, but the answer was no, I'm sorry, Jen. Like, we know it's helping, but we're not willing to even go there right now. And so I was just at the very end, I didn't know what to do. And one of my colleagues in Emerge, another family doc, was just like, I'll help you. She goes, obviously, this is really helping. So she didn't even know kind of what to do, but she tried to do whatever. And so at that point, you know, at least we didn't have to worry about it. And so the more we used it, the more his seizures just started to dissipate. And, you know, in the spring of 2017, you know, he was doing super well. And then he actually started having a relapse. So he started having, turning blue and like, he'd start having cyclic vomiting seizures in the car and I'd have to stop in the middle of traffic, run around, grab him out of his car seat. And he'd just be vomiting and seizing in the middle of the street. And we'd bring him into ER like over and over just during this 1 month and he'd be turning blue and neurology would load him with this or that. And I just started thinking, oh, this isn't working. But then at that time I got put in touch with a doctor from Quebec who had been working with cannabinoids and we went out for dinner. And I just said, look, I don't even know, like, I don't know what I'm doing and I don't know if this is going to work. And he basically redosed it in milligram per kilo for my son's weight. And we put it through his D-tube because it made more sense. It was going straight into the stomach and that. And wouldn't you know, within a day, all of his seizures stopped and he was back to being fantastic. And so at that point, I realized that there was something, there was some like mechanism and there was a way to work with cannabis. It wasn't just, you know, random, you know, try this or that, or this dose or that dose, because obviously we did something that had an effect. So in any case, one of the clinics in where I live came out to my rural community and they basically stalked me and they're like, can you please come and see these kids? Because, you know, no cannabis doctor wants to see these kids. And I literally said to them, this was sort of, I didn't know what to say. And I said, no, I'm not going to be the pot doc for kids. Like my kid, I can deal with my kid, but I don't want to be responsible for any other kids. And, you know, that sat with me for a few months and I felt really bad and I didn't know how to reconcile that. And I finally just thought, you know what? I can't do that to other parents. I'm a physician and I had a horrible time getting it for my own son. And so I started seeing intractable epileptic kids who had failed everything, this summer, fall of 2017. And I saw dramatic changes. There's a couple kids that had been around the world looking for treatments for genetic conditions I never knew existed. And my approach with those kids was, let's just treat them all and see what happens, right? Very much Dr. Mishulam's approach, but I didn't even know who he was at the time, just to treat all the kids and not just the kids with Dravet's, not just the kids with LGS, but because we don't even know what causes the seizures, right? But a seizure is a seizure, so I just figured my background's physiology. I thought, well, I mean, it's got to work for most of them. So that's what I did. And I started dosing them, milligrams per kilo based on the studies that were available from Israel, which happened to be sort of what we're using now. So way back 5 years ago, I was dosing kids. And from my own son, I'd realized that dosing it 2 to 3 times a day was more effective than dosing it once a day. And so I had this sort of algorithm that I would use. And I would, start them at this dose, move them to this dose and go from there. And I had very objective data of what I was following. In any case, that's how I started my practice. And it just kind of escalated and just snowballed. I started getting kids with cancer, kids with autism. And at the very beginning, they weren't consults, patients. They were patients that had failed everything. So I documented sort of everything that they tried, and basically made a, like my documentation was basically they failed everything. So the college can't come after me because these kids are dying, So anyways, that sort of over the years, people started consulting and then that's kind of fallen away. So now all the kids in my community, really most of them have a way to get a consult. So my son though, the first year, probably for the first 2-3 years, his seizures dropped by half, and like 50% year after year. So his hospitalizations dropped that much as well. And now as of September, we've been 3 years with no hospital visits. And so that means like no hospital visits for seizures. And actually we did have one hospital visit because he did split his head open. he fell and he got a little gash. So now I can't say we haven't been, but we went there and actually the eMERGE doctor and nurses, they recognized him and they're like, where have you been? I'm like, well, cannabis, like, My kid doesn't seize anymore, right? So, I mean, he does, but he doesn't seize the way he was. He still has a couple seizures here and there and with stressors, but he is doing fantastic. He started walking again. He's, starting to eat again. And and his story has allowed us to start to roll out. He was the first kid in my community that actually was able to have his cannabis in school. And through that process, we developed a protocol so that when the other kids I was seeing, needed their cannabis in schools, I basically said, well, this school division's doing this, so we can just do that over here. And we started just duplicating it. And so now where I live, there's already a precedent. And so, it's way easier to integrate cannabis into the kids' regular medications at school. And that's exactly how we've been treating it. It's like amoxicillin, it's like whatever. The office takes it, it gets dosed whenever the child needs it. And which is actually, we are the only ones in Canada doing that because I'm actually on a board of a bunch of advocates and educators and physicians across Canada that are working to try to help kids have cannabis in schools. And so we're actually looking at our model to try to replicate that in other parts of the country.
That is, what a story. I mean, it's like your son has become a spokesperson for the community. And when you really think about the way that you went about it, where it was a last resort. It wasn't like somebody who's like, oh, it's the prayer and the answers to everything. No, it's just an option that we've been put on the wayside that I want to consider because I don't have any other things available to me. And to me, that's what resonates in that story that you told me, which I think is super powerful. And obviously it's made a difference because it's brought all these other amazing positive things in your professional life and by helping all these kids. That's absolutely great. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Jennifer Anderson again and close it out with that. It's been an absolute amazing time so far. So let's take a little break. This is Planet Paco Lolo, talkradio.nyc. See you in a little bit.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Podcast Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Crew, it's Johnny Tsunami. I'm back here, Planet Paco Lolo, a less taboo view, here with Dr. Jennifer Anderson, all the way out in Canada, talking to us about some really amazing things that cannabis can do with medicine and how it can change people's lives, especially people that were really close to her. So Dr. Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Now, the last kind of segment, we like to talk about kind of the message, the opportunity that we bring to people within the community, the cannabis community, and the opportunities that are out there for people that are either advocates, enthusiasts, lovers, professionals, or looking to be professionals. And someone like you, I think that there's a very strong message that you put out there. One of the messages that really touched my heart was we build better. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, and maybe you can, you know, expand upon that whole movement that you're, you know, working with.
Yeah, no, I'm just blown away by how things have changed in the last few years. I think that, you know, my approach to try to integrate cannabis into regular medical care has started to really take hold here anyways. But I also, you know, really believe that putting faces to cannabis is really important, you know, and I do, I don't hesitate to sort of put my face and my son's face there, because I feel like a lot of times when people are discussing cannabis and laws or whether they believe or don't believe in it, they don't see the faces, you know, and these faces I see every day, faces of kids with, you know, terminal cancers, you know, families that are dealing with kids with autism, and you start them on cannabis and all of a sudden they're able to function in the classroom. You know, families like mine with kids that are seizing all the time, you know, and I feel like when we start to show those faces and put faces to cannabis, you know, people start to listen and realize that it's not the typical people that you would think using cannabis. It's kids, it's elderly, you know, the amount of people I have over 90 that use cannabis for their arthritis and they go dancing, right? They're off of their opioids, you know, they're not falling, they're on CBD, you know, they're doing fantastic. You know, so it's, there's a lot of stigma associated with cannabis and who we think is using it, but.
Yeah. That was a big movement for me as well. And being an advocate, you know, tattooed guy with the beard and all this. And it's like, well, I could still have a very intellectual conversation with amazing people and be able to talk about the benefits outside of just sitting in the backyard and lighting up a joint, which is not necessarily a bad pastime, but there's a lot more around it, surrounding it and revolving around it. One question I had for you, because this is just something personal for me, is where do you get your source of power from? Because it's like, you know, you got divorced, you got separated, you have these kids, you have to deal with a lot of that everyday craziness that's going on. You know, I'm hopping out of the car, going on to the other side of the car, I'm trying to stop my son from puking, I got to bring him to the house. I mean, I know already women are powerful, but where do you get your source of power from? Because you are an unstoppable force.
You know, I think at the very early on, I decided that I could sit here and be really upset at everything, or I could focus all that energy into helping others. And I know that sounds like something anybody would kind of say, but for me, that's made a huge difference, because I find that when I focus myself outward, and I try to find solutions for the problem rather than just sitting here and stewing about it, I feel like that helps me. And actually, my journey with my patients has actually really helped heal me. And I do find in the cannabis community, there is more of a community. There is, even amongst physicians and patients, we work together. We truly do. And I am 100% for my patient, and my patients feel that I am, you know, there to help them. And so, you know, working with the families, I've noticed how much trauma those families have that is similar to my own. And I really feel rejuvenated, actually, when I can work with them. I won't say I'm not exhausted after a long clinic day, because I do find that exhausting. But doing things like this and getting the word out there, we're working on a documentary that should come out in the spring, you know, talking at CMEs, talking to physicians, I find that just helps me get motivated to help more people.
I think you might be a cyborg. Because every time, last time, I mean, you know, you were in the middle of helping a patient, or somebody had called you and I was like, oh, we got the show in a few minutes, and you're like, and you were still helping someone. And then you ran over and you sit down and you're glowing. And it's like, I'm like, where's she must be, she might not even be human. I don't even know, because the amount of energy that you bring and the way that you talk about people and how you feel about your practice. I mean, one of the things that with doctors, it's, it hasn't happened. It used to be they came to your house. It was a family physician, and it's shifted away from that. So mm-hmm. It's like, to me, it's such a good feeling to know that someone like you is not just doing it for a paycheck. They're doing it because they're invested in themselves, their family, and their patients. That to me is like, you can't touch that. That's untouchable. That's really something special. Phenomenal. It really is. I commend you on it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I really, you know, I work in a rural community. So I came from a practice where I would deliver someone's baby. I would be the pediatrician. I would be the family doc for the family. I would take care of them in hospital. I'd be an emerge when they came into there. So, you know, that really well-rounded care. And I've carried that through, you know, because a lot of people in my rural community, which happens to be a very religious Mennonite community, you know, I have become the cannabis doctor in this rural community, and they come in through Emerge, and a lot of them know that we're cannabis friendly now. And I actually want to get stickers that say cannabis inclusive and put them on the doors of the hospital. So, because, you know, people feel that they can have, you know, a conversation about it. And patients that get admitted to the hospital, we're one of the first hospitals in Canada where I do cannabis consults in hospital. You know, the hospitalist will call me, can you come see this patient? Okay, like, they don't want opioids. They want, you know, they want to explore cannabis. Can you do that? Yeah, you know, I've worked with local pharmacies that will deliver it to the hospital, you know, and just tried to find that rural type of family doc care that you're talking about, right? Because I think that's how we can service our patients the best.
So what about now? I mean, you're in Canada, we're in the US. Do you have any people in the US that you would recommend for anybody who's listening who might have children at home that are suffering, or, you know, or if there's anybody out there?
You mean for physicians, you mean?
For physicians and for, you know, like what you're doing with people and how you're helping them. I mean, is there any kind of option like that in the US?
Well, I do know Dr. Bonnie Goldstein, who's been, you know, fantastic. She is one of the first physicians to see kids in the States, and she runs the Canna Centers. I've had the honor of speaking with her, and she's helped me with a few of my cases, you know, but she is amazing. And I know that anybody that sort of can get care through one of her centers is probably in a very good place. Dr. Bridget Williams has also become a friend, and she also runs some clinics as well. And, you know, so those two physicians are ones that I personally have interacted with. But I'm sure there's other ones. A lot of the docs that, you know, do cannabis, a lot of them, you know, have been sort of shy about what they do. And I was like that the first few years, and it just came to a point where I was like, hey, I'm all in. I'm 100% doing this. Like me or hate me, you know, I'm just gonna go 100%.
Yeah. And if you want to own it, you got to be a proponent. And that's what it is. And that's what it takes. If we're going to break that taboo, which is what we like to do on Planet Paco Lolo, then we need to be around people such as yourself that are willing to throw themselves on the chopping block and say, hey, listen, I'm living proof that this is something that can make a change. Well, let me tell you, that was a powerful hour. And I was really happy and excited that you were able to come on today's show. Dr. Anderson, it has been a great time. I'm really happy that we were able to talk. Is there any outlets that we can reach you if anybody wants to reach out to you?
So I have a website, Dr. Jennifer Anderson, Cannabis MD, and I welcome any, you know, anybody messaging through that website. I will be trying to post more blogs on there and make it more of a central hub. I also am on Instagram at Confessions of a Single Doctor Mom, which is something I started that was more therapeutic for me a long time ago, but it's just evolved into being a cannabis community. So.
Beautiful. I checked that out one already. So awesome. Listen, folks, it's another one in the books. Dr. Jennifer Anderson, thank you so much for coming out. I'm Johnny Tsunami. This is Planet Paco Lolo. Next week, we'll be interviewing I just have my doctor. I'm still in doctor zone. Albert Bruchard, Bruchard and his daughter, Isabella Bruchard, owner of Geomat Sustainable Energy for Cannabis Plants. So folks, it's been a pleasure. I can't wait to see you next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a great evening. Planet Paco Lolo, a less taboo view on talkradio.nyc. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Uplift, educate, empower.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.